No dejaremos que cierren la linda puerta que siempre ha estado abierta a la vida.
You're listening to Latin Radical with Warwick Fry.
Now, it's been a big week in Bolivia, Lara. Now, briefly, what happened last Tuesday on the 9th of September in Bolivia, and why was the US ambassador asked to leave the country the next day?
Warwick, well, the situation in Bolivia, in Latin America's poorest country, has been quite serious for some time, really since Morales was elected and took office back in 2006. He has been under attack and in the sights of the United States administration. Here we have a popular indigenous leader running the poorest country of Latin America with massive popular support. However, as well as being the poorest country, it's a resource-rich country with a very elite oligarchy, very wealthy elite oligarchy, as many of the countries in Latin America have. And they're very closely allied to that US administration and their attempts to continue to control their backyard, as they like to think of Latin America.
How would you describe the way the oligarchy is reacting?
I don't use the term fascist lightly, but there is no doubt that it's a fascist coup that's underway. It's actually a coup in process in Venezuela and has been over recent weeks. It's no coincidence that the ruling representatives of Santa Cruz, the very elite and area of the very wealthy white oligarchy in Bolivia, are represented in the federal parliament there, but collaborating with some very wealthy European business people who have had previous experience in this sort of, I think it's called the Orange Revolution, but this secessionist and the movement that the right-wing movement that emerged in Croatia, which is now very much alive and funded through the United States in Latin America, and with an impact we've had three.
And is that why the American ambassador was expelled from the country?
Yes, indeed. There was a series of emails exposed back in July, actually, when U.S. Undersecretary of State Shannon was visiting Latin America. There was a series of emails between the embassy and USAID and other key figures funding the coup and funding coup and succession attempts. And this is the strategy that the United States has. I mean, we've seen certain elements of Plan Condor and Plan Miranda and various other plans, Plan Nerida and Plan Condor and other plans underway in the region. These strategies and plans, military operatives as well, that are underway, and political destabilisation, have culminated in three coup attempts in Latin America in the past 3 weeks, and that is the coup in Paraguay against the new populist president of Paraguay, the coup that's underway and ongoing in Bolivia and has unfortunately resulted today in the declaration of a state of emergency in part of the country of Bolivia, where 17 members of the popular forces have been, popular support, if you like, campesinos, poor people who support the government, have been killed in these anti-government mobilisations by the oligarchy and their forces. And although they're a small fascist force, they're a very wealthy and, very well-resourced force, and they are able to mobilise and act violently and certainly afford, if they don't convince people politically, they can afford to pay them to support their ideals. But I'm sure that they can, given the amount of wealth that they control and would like to continue to control, they can also mobilise.
There is a fascistic element there. There's a racist element. The government of Bolivia did try to avoid declaring martial law or state of emergency, as they called over there, and for the first part of a week or 2 weeks. What has happened recently that led them to led the government to finally call in martial law?
Indeed, the government has been trying to avoid any use of military repression or to bring in the military, and that's, you can imagine, after decades of military dictatorship in the country and many people being disappeared or outright killed, thousands of Bolivians killed through the dictatorship years of Mesa. And this is not a strategy that leftist and popular governments want to use to turn around and employ the military in any way, but there is a civic military alliance there whereby the masses of popular movements and people work in cooperation with sections of the military. There are still some issues there.
You do have these paramilitary organisations in Santa Cruz, which is out of the control of the government.
Yes, absolutely. Well, this is right. This is where the sabotage of government buildings and, in fact, the killing and beating and racist attacks from neo-Nazi, and they are fascist and neo-Nazi groups that proudly, and young people that proudly wear the neo-Nazi insignia, or Nazi insignia. Yes, they have been burning and destroying government buildings, and they've also, the most serious, as you're probably aware, Warwick, has been the sabotage of the major gas pipeline. And, you know, Bolivia, although it's currently, you know, the poorest country of South America, is incredibly resource-rich, and this is about a fight over the resources and sovereignty and self-determination of the masses of indigenous people of
that they want to, you know, nationalise or keep within the country the resources.
Indeed, and why wouldn't they when they've seen the outstanding results in Venezuela, for example, of bringing those resources and the income from those resources back into popular control and resources that are then utilised as they should be for the benefit of the entire population, rather than being siphoned off by the oligarchy or a few rich families and corrupt officials. And that's really what's at stake in Bolivia and why it's come to the situation that it has come to. But I think we'll see restraint and hopefully the use of diplomacy to resolve the situation. Venezuela, though, has come in solidarity and expelled the US ambassador to Venezuela, who was also involved in a coup attempt in this past week, and implicated there. So you can see the need for regional solidarity, I think, more than ever in Latin America at the moment, and you can see that they're getting it. And Honduras as well, and President Zelaya has also put off the receiving of credentials from the new US ambassador to Honduras, and that ceremony that was supposed to happen has been postponed, again in a specific act of solidarity. I think that you're seeing a regional solidarity and a feeling that Latin America can do it for themselves, that they no longer need to be the US's backyard. It's a really positive, I think, step forward. That's right, Honduras's president surprised everyone a little while ago, within the last few weeks, when he came on board the ELBA, the Bolivarian Alternative for Latin America agreement, whereby it's a preferential partner with Venezuela. There's alternative trading arrangements put in place that bypass the traditional World Bank and US dollar sort of trade and actually come out with mutually beneficial arrangements for the two countries, and countries that don't necessarily either have a preferential price or don't necessarily pay in dollars at all for the year.
It seems that Venezuela has sort of exposed a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes, certainly. I think that we've seen more regional unity and leadership coming from Venezuela. And, since they, I guess, really a few years ago when they ceased relationships with the School of the Americas, which for Bolivia particularly was a massive step forward when they followed suit, and five countries now have all declined to continue their relationship militarily with the School of the Americas, the training school of the assassins, as it's often referred to. And I think we're seeing many positive steps forward for the region through that leadership that comes from Venezuela, and increasingly from Bolivia, from Ecuador and other countries that are saying we're not going to be, and we're not going to continue to be the US's backyard. Siphoning the wealth off from those countries to the rich oligarchy and started putting the resources back into their people. And that's why you'll see popular support and defence of those revolutions or social changes underway and transformations in each of those countries, backed by mass popular support, because people don't want to give up what they're now getting for the first time ever, which are some benefits, some social, economic and political benefits.
The oligarchy is starting to squeal and
That's right, and it's a very fitting thing to take place, Warwick, on the 35th anniversary of the assassination of Allende and the coup in Chile.
Yes.
And I'm sure you've been discussing that on your program as well.
There are extraordinary parallels, and it seems that the US has not learnt some of the lessons, and that the people who are resisting US hegemony have learnt lessons.
And this time have the power to back it up. And there's a very popular saying in Venezuela and also now in Bolivia and other places, and that is that their revolutions are not, that they are peaceful revolutions, but they are not unarmed. And they will, of course, protect themselves with whatever force is necessary and protect their sovereignty. And we're also seeing that climate of regional unity that we've not seen previously in Latin America. Mm-hmm. This is, I think, perhaps the most unified we've seen the region ever. And to be able to stand up to the United States and say, no, no more. We won't tolerate any more of this. And I'm hoping that that will be enough to head off another pattern.
The US can no longer shelter behind the excuse of the Cold War.
So although I have heard in the last week the emerging term, and of course for years they've been talking about the new Cold War in Latin America as this unity process has deepened and as the relationships have developed and the turn to the left, as you like, has been progressing in Latin America. We've heard more and more in the Spanish discourse. Certainly they've been talking about the new Cold War. And only in the past week, of course, we've heard the Secretary of State and the State Department take up that discourse as well and talk about a new Cold War situation developing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken them a long time to come around to that, but I'm not sure if the, I would hope that the world's population now is educated by that story now.
It's a stale war. Really, it lacks the resonance that it had in the 60s and even the 70s. So.
It does. It has. It doesn't have that same fear. I don't think of the reds under the beds thing and the exposure of McCarthyism and the crimes that were committed in the names of those wars against communism. I think there's been enough expose and reporting over and investigative work done. I think over the last few decades to expose the terrible crimes committed in the names. In the name of fighting the Reds under the beds, and
it's coming back down to the economic, nitty gritty.
Well, I'd like to think so, Warwick. But I guess the American people are the ones to ask on that, unfortunately, because it does seem like there's a thick Bible Belt, as they call it, through the United States, who are definitely incredibly conservative in their politics and feel they have a God-given right to dominate and to continue to manage the empire. As they see fit, and I'm sure that they would still have the same sort of racist views towards Latin America as the oligarchy themselves in those countries do. So I would hope that the majority of brothers and sisters of the United States of America, the majority of ordinary people, would see that their interests are probably similar to the interests of ordinary people anywhere in the world. But I'm not, there's still... There's still that conservative force that runs through and many wars being committed in the name of the United States of America and the voting public in that country would have to answer to that, I guess.
And do you think Australia is relatively immune to that? Or
I think you can see a clear imperialist ally in terms of the administrations in both countries and, a belt of conservative thinking that supports the role of the empire. There is, of course, having said that the common interests of ordinary people on both continents, the overwhelming racism that was shown in the United States in the wake of the responses to Hurricane Katrina, for example, have been really well discussed. The racism towards Latino workers in Latin America and immigrants, I think those sorts of things are increasingly at the forefront of people's minds. And also, how democracy in the United States works and the collegiate system and the voting system of the United States and the sorts of strange goings-on that have seen the people return to power there have been increasingly under scrutiny and just the lack of participation in elections over there. You've got a non-compulsory voting system, as you do across a lot of Latin America, I'll say. But, you don't see the trend... I haven't seen the same trend in the United States voting patterns as we're seeing in Latin America, where they're returning, for example, if one take Venezuela and returning, each election has been showing an increased popular support for an incumbent president. I mean, that's unheard of.
And they don't have compulsory voting there, do they? In Venezuela, is it compulsory?
Certainly a moral, there's a moral imperative there for all to participate, because there's a great encouragement of political literacy and engagement in what they call popular power. And one of the forms of exercising that popular power is through the ballot box. And so people are certainly encouraged. And there was a great program some years ago of encouraging everyone to enrol to vote and to make sure they have identity papers.
Yeah, there's a huge participation there, and in Venezuela, even though it isn't, you know, what we call obligatory.
Well, it's greatly increased. That's right. It's greatly increased on what it had been under their old two-party Tweedledum and Tweedledee. Or I don't think they've approved through the administration there of the increasing popularity at each elections, and each elections has stood up to international scrutineering.
Thanks for talking to us, and
then if you would. Be good enough to keep monitoring the situation in Bolivia. I think the Western media is and the English language media is increasingly putting out the US administration's version of events in the region.
They're starting to do that.
Yes, I think they've always been, you know, the recent years anyway, they've certainly intensely put out the US administration's position backing the imperialist role in the region, so you get a distorted version of events. Yeah. And it's very important for the community media and for ordinary people to be informed, to be able to read around the lies that are, and the spin that's being put out through the administration, and actually see that there are very direct links here between the US administration and their military and political plans for the region. Yeah. And particularly to denounce the killings. I mean, there's another 27 people who've just been massacred. It's up to the, and I think the body count will continue to rise. And they've been, and we're talking about civil conflicts now, which is akin to the sorts of conflicts one sees in a, in, you know, in a civil war situation.
Yeah.
And that's the deliberate, that's the hope and the aim of the people provoking this violence. And that's why, you know, the reaction is so very important, because you don't want people going in there and being massacred, obviously. Nobody wants to.